Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. If you have a legal question of any type, some problem you'd like to discuss, just something on your mind, something maybe kept you up last night, worried about it, what might happen, Ask an Attorney live every Saturday morning at 8:02 to 8:52, straight 50 minutes of non-commercial information and live talk. So if I can help you in any way, all you have to do is to dial the toll-free number 877- 943-9673. Today we're broadcasting from Jacksonville. Every other week we broadcast from Jacksonville, and every other week we broadcast from Tampa. You're listening to 14 on one of 14 stations around Florida that carry the live show Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Today we're in Jacksonville, WBOB 600 on your dial. Also, there's an FM component to the show. Also, we are listening in the Salem family of stations in Tampa on 570, 910, 860, 930. There are also some FM components on that station. I can't remember. I always remember the AM stations and not the FM stations. But if you're listening, great to have you. 90.3 FM in, I do remember one, WLVF in Haines City, Florida. A long time station, carried the show for a long, long time, helped them with a lot of telethons in their effort to keep that station as vibrant and great as it is, and even better. And also the Sun City station, 96.3 FM, community station, and we also have a Crystal Rock station up in Crystal River area that covers the show, and if I've gotten any, I'll remember them during the course of the show. Let's go to our first caller, Frank in Tampa. Hey, Frank. All right, Frank.
Yeah, I had a quick.
All right, go ahead. I got you now.
Okay. Yeah, I got a question as far as bringing somebody to small claims court. What is the limit now for small claims?
$5,000 the last time I checked.
Okay, $5,000.
How much is your case worth?
$3,900.
Okay, well, that'd work.
And, yeah, and of course, the usual problem is, you know, when you got somebody that owes you money and you bring them the small claims, if they don't show up, you automatically get the judgment. And when you get the judgment, how do you proceed to execute the judgment?
Yeah, getting the judgment is the easy part sometimes, and then collecting on the judgment is the more difficult part. So what you do is the best result is getting an attorney at that point to do a deposition called in aid of execution of the judgment. And then the person is subpoenaed, has to appear, or they'll be in contempt of court. And then they have to, you tell them what they have to bring to the deposition, which is a list of all of their assets and so forth. And then you try to figure out what you can collect on. It's worth the effort, I think, to get the judgment, because sometimes getting the judgment itself makes them want not to have to go through all that and have a judgment on their credit. So sometimes I tell people to go down to small claims court, get the forms, fill them out, send the person you're trying to get the money from a copy of what you're getting ready to file with a deadline on when they can pay you without that. And then if they miss the deadline, go ahead and file the papers, get the judgment. And then, you know, consider how you're going to collect the money. There are something like a car. Sometimes it's easier to get if the car has any equity in it.
No, this is this is kind of a labor commission type thing.
That's the economic side of the question. Do you want to spend your time doing all this when you might not ever get anything? But a judgment's good. You know, you can every 7 years you can renew the judgment, so you can cause the personal anguish that owes you money for a period of time with still the opportunity to collect on it. All right, Frank, if you want to talk about that further, just give me a call off the air, and I'll be glad to chat with you some more.
Yeah, what number off the air was
my office good? Number, I'll give you the toll-free office number so everybody can have it, is 1-800-226-3529.
Okay. 3529.
All right.
Okay, Joe.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Let's go to Joe in Tampa. Hey, Joe.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Is this attorney?
This is. You're on the air, live. What can we do for you?
Oh, live. Okay, I better speed it up here.
That's better than the alternative, live, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Hey, attorney, I have a question. I made up a will on freewill.com. Pretty straightforward. It's like 8 pages. A couple questions for you. It wants at least 2 witnesses, which why is that important to have the witnesses? And my second question is, can my daughter, who's the sole beneficiary of everything, can she be one of the witnesses to sign this document?
All right, so the first question is, why are witnesses important? Because the statutes in Florida and most states make that a requirement of having a valid will. So if you don't you don't have witnesses, you don't have a valid will, so the court would not honor the will.
Okay, I understand. So can my daughter, the beneficiary, be one of the witnesses?
No, a general rule is that an interested party should not be a witness.
Okay, that's cleared up.
Now let me ask you a question, though. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you own a home?
I'm building a new home in Lakeland now, and I'm going. That's another question I wanted to ask you. Thank you. The title company asked me who do I want on the title. I did the title where I'm the primary and she's the secondary, but I have control. I forget what the phrase is. In other words. She can't sell it under me, but I can go ahead and sell it without her signature. I forget.
We're talking about a life estate deed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, the will would have no control over that. The will would have no control over that because that if you did it that way and that's a valid life estate deed or a Lady Bird deed, they call it sometimes, that would pass on to her upon your death. A lot of my clients...
That's fine.
A lot of my clients do a living trust.
I know. I've heard you talk about it. This seems simpler and cheaper, just putting her on the deed. She can't sell the property behind my back, but I could sell it without her signature, correct?
Yeah, the disadvantage there, just one of the disadvantages is, though, suppose you have a stroke and become incapacitated for a period of time, and the house would need to be sold because you're never going to move back to it, but, you know, your life expectancy is, you know, quite a few more years, then nothing really happens to that property until death. And if it was inside a living trust, she could be a successor trustee and could sell it and do whatever she needed to do with it for your benefit and the best lifestyle that you can be accomplished with your own assets. And there's a lot more flexibility in having a trust dealing with incapacity, not just death.
Well,
yeah, but we don't. That's just information for you to consider at some point. So, what? Yeah. Any other questions?
Okay. Yeah. If it's just a simple matter, I have money in a Wells Fargo account that I could transfer to her if I ran into health problems. Do I need a will? I'm obtaining a term life policy. I'm almost 60. I'm 59 this October. Would you recommend a 20 or 30? Because the policies, I'm finding out insurance companies don't pay out any policies. It's less than 5% or 3% that insurance companies actually pay out policies. People either get tired of paying the monthly premiums or they just quit it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm 59 and my parents died at 40, 84, 85, wouldn't it be wise to get the 80, the 30, or the 25 year rather than the 20 year?
Yeah, I would probably go with the extra years. Yes, sir.
Okay, and that would be included in the language inside the will, the freewill.com that I...
No, life insurance is controlled by who the beneficiary is, so the will wouldn't control that either.
Okay, but could I mention it in the will?
Doesn't do any good because the name beneficiary goes directly to the daughter regardless of what the will says.
Okay. All right, but definitely get the witness signatures. The bank agreed to do it, Wells Fargo, even though they're not, they don't usually do that. They're doing it as a favor for me. That would be okay, since they are notaries. That would suffice.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For everyone listening to that call, also, there are a lot of other important documents to do, a living will, a healthcare surrogate. Really, most people make a mistake with doing their own documents, and it's more costly in the end than if they had just had an attorney who knows what they're doing to get it all set up properly and fully explain all the choices and consequences. Let's go to Priscilla. Good morning.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Jacksonville, okay. What can we do for you?
Okay, basically I have a 17-year-old son, and he has schizoaffective disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And I am wondering if I need to get like guardianship or power of attorney over him before he gets 18, because right now he's manageable and he's, you know, seemingly normal.
Well, you can't get a power of attorney because he'd have to, well, if he's competent to sign it, well, no, he's 17, so he can't sign a legal document.
Okay.
So you won't get a power of attorney until he's 18.
Okay, so I have to wait.
For any legal document that he would sign, you have to wait till he's 18.
Okay. Well, what exactly is guardianship? Because
guardianship's kind of an expensive
about his medical stuff.
Well, how close is he to 18?
If he gets off, he'll be 18 in May.
In May, okay.
See, if he gets off his medication.
Mm-hmm.
He will revert quickly into his delusional state.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get him to take his pills now, even though he's manageable. So I feel like once he gets 18, he'll say, I don't want to take medication, and I won't be able to talk to doctors, and I won't be able to make sure he goes to therapy and goes to a psychiatrist and things like that, and I just worry the worst would happen, because the doctor told me that if he gets off his medication, that each time they do that, it's harder to get him back normalized. So that's why.
Okay, well, in the very, very short time you and I are talking for the first time, my first thought is yes. Under those, it doesn't sound like his circumstances are going to get any better, and perhaps worse. And probably the sooner you would establish
it, doesn't go away.
Yes, the sooner you establish a guardianship in that case, if that's all true, then the sooner the better. And
okay. I don't wait till he's 18 then.
No.
For that.
No, because, you know, if everything was good and you could trust him to sign the power of attorney health care surrogate once he turned 18, that would be the far cheaper way to go. But those documents could be revoked by him at any time. So if he's unpredictable and a danger to himself, and that's only going to get worse, you definitely would need to establish a guardianship.
Okay.
If you want to contact me, I'll try to help you find a guardianship attorney here in Jacksonville.
Okay, yeah.
So my email address is Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. I do a lot of estate planning myself here in Jacksonville, but guardianship, I would probably recommend a local attorney for you on that one. Okay?
Yeah, when I called somebody, they said that because of mental illness, it's a specific attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a guardianship. Attorney. It's going to be a guardianship attorney.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to attorney John Frazier. John's attorney in our firm who does mainly Medicaid and VA planning, and he calls in for the Medicaid VA tip of the week. Good morning, John.
Hey, Joe. How you doing today?
Good, and you?
Pretty good.
What do you got for us today?
Today I was going to talk about retirement accounts and Medicaid planning. As a general rule, we can make retirement accounts like IRAs and 401ks, and there's a couple other ones out there too. We can make them exempt no matter how large they are. So even if it were $500,000 or $1 million, as long as we set up a regular systematic distribution of all income plus some principal, typically we would set that up on a monthly payout. The state of Florida will treat that IRA or 401k as exempt. And there are other types of plans out there like a 403b, which is for public school employees and nonprofit employees. A 457 plan is another type of retirement account for governmental employees and some other types of non-governmental employees.
Has that rule changed recently?
No, it hasn't changed in quite some time, and it's actually a fairly generous rule that we have because, for example, in VA planning, IRAs are just treated as exempt assets, and you can't set up that payout to make them exempt. And I believe also in other states, they're also countable assets.
All right, so say the husband goes in a nursing home and has a $500,000 IRA. So he can qualify for Medicaid, and the income from that can go to his spouse for life or whatever the terms of the IRA are?
That would really depend. Typically, the Medicaid applicant has to pay a portion of the income that person generates. So what we would do in a situation like that is we would look at the total income generated, do a calculation, add some principal to so that we would meet the Medicaid rule. And then let's say that it paid out $500 a month. If the person also had $1,000 a month in Social Security, then that would be the starting point for the calculation for the Medicaid portion, $1,500. But depending on the income of the community spouse, she may be entitled to some of the Medicaid applicant's income. It really depends on what her income level is. And that has to do with another topic called income allocation or income diversion to the community spouse. So let's say that the spouse had zero income. Depending on the strategies that we use to obtain Medicaid, under that fact pattern, if we didn't use a strategy called spousal refusal, the spouse in the community would actually be able to keep all $1,500 of the Medicaid applicant's income under that fact pattern.
So the retirement account would not have to be liquidated, though.
That's really the point. And not only that, you can name beneficiaries on that retirement account so that when the Medicaid applicant passes away, as long as it avoids probate and you have a beneficiary on there, the beneficiary is going to inherit that money and the state of Florida doesn't get paid back on that. So it's a really great strategy. And we're very lucky that we have it here in Florida.
All right, so it's not the same in every state then?
No, it's going to be different in every state.
But all right, John. Well, that sounds to me like a complicated subject, so I'm glad you're here to help people. But if they have a situation where they have a loved one that's either in it, this can be for someone who is already in a nursing home on private pay and they're trying to pay down to get to a certain point, or it could be someone that's getting ready to enter into a nursing home with assets and they want to protect as much as they can. How can they contact you to discuss this in further detail?
The office number is 727-586-3306, extension 104. My cell phone is 813-431-3193. My email address is john@attypip.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
All right. Have a great Saturday.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. All right. You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, host of Ask an Attorney, coming up next month, 35 years, continually. Longest running show in Florida, I think. I don't know of any other shows that have had a continual host, same format for that long. So how much longer will I go? Nobody knows. Hey, as long as I can talk pretty quickly and give you a rational answer with some legal knowledge and do it smooth and quick and flowing, I'll probably continue. And I ask people all the time, when I get to the point where I can't do that, please let me know. You might have to tell me twice, but please let me know, because I like, I just enjoy this. I mean, I could be out fishing or playing golf or something on Saturday mornings. Hey, I choose to do this. I can do other things later, but this is what I like to do, and it's just, I got in my blood, I guess, a long, long time ago, back in 1984, and I just continue to do it and enjoy doing it. We do a Saturday morning show on multiple stations around Florida every other Sunday, and out of the Tampa, I do another show on a different station, and not going to give any call letters or anything about that, but it's just something I like to do. Also, during the week, I'll be asked numerous times to do either a television show or a radio show somewhere. I love doing seminars. I was telling a client I had yesterday from Nocatee, came in to see me here in Jacksonville, that I just love speaking engagements. And someone, I do a lot of those at churches and community groups and clubs and all, and there's no fee for that. So if you ever need a speaker, hey, consider, I'll come in and talk about a legal topic and take questions for a while. And you and I can determine what the legal topic is, of course. If you'd like to call the show, it's 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673 is a toll-free number to call Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. Let's go to Charles in Sarasota.
43-9673.
All right, Charles, you need to cut your radio off.
It's done.
All right, thank you. What can I do for you?
Is this
This is Joe. Yes, sir.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
What I need to, I have a question. Now, my wife and I have IRA annuities, and they're already, the beneficiaries are already assigned from those.
Yes, sir.
So if either one of us goes, there's no problem with those. Am I correct?
Correct.
All right. The next question is, I married her 10 years ago. And when I came into the marriage, you know, I just came in with myself. Now, she owned a home, still does. It's in her name. I'm not on the deed. She would like the home, God forbid if she goes first, to go to her son and myself. Is there any paperwork, or do I need to get on the deed for this to happen? Because there's no will. It's just an assumption that if she dies, I stay in the house until... Well, I guess I die, and then her son gets it. But there's no paperwork saying so.
Well, under Florida law, you do not have a pre- or post-marital agreement, right?
No, we don't.
Under Florida law, you have a spousal right as a husband to live in the home for life, and then it would pass to her son.
Automatically?
Because well, through a court, through the probate court, there's a way this
it would have
to
be probate.
So
he wouldn't get the home immediately. Now, what about the privilege of selling the home?
Well, you could elect, though. You didn't let me finish here. So you have the right to live there for life, or you have the right to take half ownership, with the other half going to him upon death. But that's a process that's done without a will through the probate court to establish that. Now, she could create a living trust, and you could join in on the signing of the deed to waive your spousal right, and then she could, in the directions of the distribution language of the trust, she could give half to you and half to her son.
Right.
So there is a legal way that I could do a document that would make the outcome what you wanted.
Okay. Now, at the time of my death, again, God forbid that she should go first. At the time of my death, after she does, would that living trust then, would my children get half of the home?
No, you could create a living trust.
In other words, I would make a living trust, and I live longer than she does, and then I die. Now, of course, after she dies, my son-in-law and myself own half the house each. But if I should die then, does he get the whole house, or do my children get the half that I owned?
Well, it's up to you, because the house could come out of the trust, half to you and half to him, and then you could do whatever you wanted to with your half. So then you could have a document, a trust or whatever, you could have a document that gives your half to him or to your children, whatever you prefer.
I see. And then they would hash out whether they want to sell a home and do whatever they do.
Now, can I give you another choice?
I wish you would. More choices, the better, I think.
Well, a choice would be for your wife to create a trust. You'd join in on signing of the deed, waiving your spousal right, even though the distribution and the trust says upon her death you get half, or however she wants to do that. But the distribution in her trust could give you what's called a life estate, which means you don't have outright ownership. You'd have the right to live in the house for life. And then upon your death, it would go to her son.
I see. I kind of like the other option, where my kids at least get something out of the
deal. Well, yeah. Well, if you like that option, then sure, you wouldn't. You hope she's not listening to the show?
No.
No, I'm just kidding. But that would be fine. You could waive your... Well, you're waiving your right so she can put it in the trust, but then you wind up with half and her son winds up with half. But what's going to happen? You plan on living there? I was thinking that it's hard to own a property with the son when you're the only one living there. Are you planning on living there upon death?
Yeah.
Until you die? Yeah.
That would be my hope. all right, we go through this one, the trust, and I sign the deed, and then it's called then a life estate.
Mm-hmm.
And upon her death, her and my son-in-law received ownership of the home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but you suggest I should also have a life estate that upon my death, that my children receive my half of the home?
No, let's say that you have so many options here, and I do have an office in Sun City if y'all want to come in to discuss this with me. But let's say you sign a deed, a valid deed with the proper language in there about homestead and everything that's required under Florida law, and she creates a trust, and you two both sign the deed, putting that property into a trust. Then if she dies first, the trust has language on what to say. So the language in the deed could be she gives one half to her son and one half to you. The one half that she gives to her son, she could put in there that you have the right to live in the property for life before it goes to him. So she's not giving him outright ownership immediately upon her death. She's giving you the right to live in his half, giving you half outright and giving him the half. Giving you the right to live in his half until you die, and then that half goes to him, and you still can do whatever you want to with your half.
Okay.
That sounds like what you really want. Now, whether she would buy that would be a different situation, perhaps. And the best way to do that is the three of us, the two of you and an attorney, sit down and discuss exactly what you want, if that would work.
Okay, and I need your last name, Joe, because I want to look up where your office is.
Yeah, Pippin. Pippin. P-I-P-P. P-I-P-P-E-N. Ian.
Ian, all right.
And our website, our website for anyone who wants to check us out is ATTY, just the abbreviation for attorney, ATTYPIP.
PEY.
ATTY.
TTY, okay.
I'm not sure you still have it. ATTY.
ATTY.
PIP.
PIP.com. Okay, boy. How did I get everything I have there so much? Okay, I got it.
Also, I have a free estate planning poster sheet that would benefit you and anyone else who wants it. So you can get that by calling the toll-free office number, and they'll be glad to mail it to you, which goes over trust and so forth, at 1-800-226-3529.
3529. 3529.
Yes, sir. All right, Charles.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
I appreciate it, and thank you. I hope this helps someone else.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Dan. Dan in Jacksonville. Hey, Dan.
Yes, sir.
What can we do for you, sir?
Oh, Joe, thank you. I live in a homeowners association, and there's a rental unit down the street. It's an end unit. And the neighbors next door, which happened to be the president of the homeowners association, advised me that there's some equipment in there trying to get the mold and mildew out. They can hear actually large fans running. They share a common wall. They've never heard a thing in 30 years from this unit before, but there's equipment in there. And the main cause, more than likely, is the yards now don't drain as well as they once did. The yards are the responsibility of the homeowners. And so my question for you is, once they get this unit corrected, assuming they even do, because the guy's a cheapskate that owns it, is the owner of this property, whether they rent it again or sell it, are they under any obligation to let future tenants know that this problem existed?
Well, that's a good question. How severe? It probably depends on how severe it is.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm hearing it from the person next door who actually brought me in so I could hear these fans running. And I called a home improvement show here in town, and he says it's probably got the right equipment in there that conditions the air, but it had the original carpeting in it from 1984, which was kind of really nasty, as you can imagine. And from what I understand, because I had a similar problem, but not a great one, where it's important in Florida to keep the foundation, the soil underneath your house dry. Mm-hmm. And you do that by gutters and getting the water, you know, to run away from the house and whatnot. And this house has the opposite problem. There's no gutters, and the lay of the land has changed. And a few homeowners have had their backyards where they now don't drain well, and they've taken steps to make them drain well. And so, you know, like I said, my main question is, you know, I know the homeowners association has no dog in this fight. I'm more concerned for somebody who either buys it or potential renters, because I'm on the board of directors, so I've got a little more, you know, concern than say that an average person would.
Hey, the show right after my show here in Jacksonville, Jacksonville only now for all the other stations that are listening to me, it's the best real estate show that I've heard on the air. It's Howard and Angela come in here, and they are just so helpful and have so much knowledge. And I know this is probably a legal question, but I know they would know the answer to that question. And if Howard usually gets here first, and if he comes in, I'll wave him into the show. And well, he'll either tell me don't wave him because he might, if he knows the answer, you'll be glad to come in here and share that with me. I'm going to say it's kind of a gray line. I don't think there is a statute. There is a statute that says if you have any known things about, you can't conceal them. I mean, you can't conceal a known problem in the house. So it should be disclosed. Whether or not a mold issue that you can completely take care of to pass any mold inspections that will come in there, and you know, a number of years go by, whether you have to disclose that exactly or not, I don't think so, but I'm not positive. And I'm also have a real estate broker's license. I mean, I'm an attorney, but I have a real estate broker's license for about 25 years, and I use it mainly to deal with the estate properties that I deal with in my estate planning practice. But okay. I don't think there's a total obligation if the problem is totally fixed. If there's an ongoing problem, of course it should be disclosed if the seller knows about it, but that'd be a great question for either you to call Howard if I don't get to have him in the show and he doesn't get here right. My show ends a little bit earlier than most. It ends at 8:52 because I don't do a show with commercials in it. So they run all the commercials at the end, and then they come in sometimes a little bit earlier.
Okay. All right. I've got to leave and run an errand, but I'm going to turn his show. When I get back to the house, I should be back within an hour, and I will call his show.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Well, let me have AJ give you the local number here, because I use a different number, a phone number here. What's the number he can call the show?
All right, you can call here at 904-831-0600.
All right, there you go. I thought it was talk, though.
Okay, 831-0600, and that's for the real estate show.
Okay, all right, very good. All right, okay. Thank you.
And if I miss him this week, I will definitely call him.
Well, you can email me, because I'll talk to him about it, and you can email me, and I'll be glad to email you the answer.
Okay, yeah, I'm concerned for the people who live in that.
Yeah, I understand.
All right, thank you, Sir Joe, and I appreciate your show.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Margie in Sun City Center. Hey, Margie. Margie, are you there? All right, let's put Margie on hold. Maybe we can get her coming back after we talked to, is it Horst?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, how do you spell your name?
H-O-R-S-T.
Oh, okay. Very good. What can we do for you, sir?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, a insurance company, I'm party to a suit from an insurance company that covered the repairs on a house for a buyer. The realtor was representing the seller, and they hired an illegal electrician. And the electrician called us when he realized he needed a permit.
Was that a non-licensed permission, electrician?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, non-licensed. They represented himself as an electrician, and he's actually facing felony counts and all that stuff right now. But so he hired us, called us, represented himself as the seller's contractor.
Agent?
Hired us to do the minor repair that needed the permit, which was the panel. We did the repair. We passed our inspections. And then the buyer came in, moved in, discovered all the stuff that was supposed to be done electrically wasn't done or was done hacked-like. So they filed a lawsuit against the realtor. The realtor subsequently used her insurance company to pay the claim. And then that insurance company put me as one of four of the party, myself, the supposed contractor, his company, and one other that had something else to do with the repairs. And so now they've asked for a default judgment against all parties. My question is, do I just let it go? It's $18,000. My culpability, I mean, by the time I pay an attorney and everything, is it just cheaper to just pay part of the share and be done with it? I've just never been exposed to anything like this, so I don't know if I...
So you already have a judgment against you?
No. They filed with the judge for a default judgment. I got served a paper through the mail that said they're requesting a default judgment against all parties. And I'm part of that party. So, you know, do I just let the judge decide, you know, there's four of you, you're each 25% responsible, and write a check for $5,000, or do I fight this?
Well, if you can fight it and defend yourself, I wouldn't want a judgment against me.
Yeah,
I can give you an attorney that can handle this in the Tampa Bay area, or at least for you to someone talk to that does litigation in these type of, to see whether or not he should enter his appearance in there, and at least to negotiate you doing something without having a judgment against you.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure how that worked.
Yeah,
I
mean, no, if you can negotiate a settlement out of it, I wouldn't want a judgment on my record if I were you.
Okay.
So if you talk to a litigation attorney and he hears the whole story and he in this case it is a he in this case, I'm not trying to say it couldn't be a she, but the person I would refer to you is a gentleman who is experienced in litigation on cases like this, perhaps, or I know experienced a litigation attorney. I don't know if he's had a case exactly like this, but he can negotiate.
Yeah.
Let's suppose you talk to him and he says, "Well, you might have some liability on this, and if this thing rolls to court, you could end up a judgment. So, but let me see if I can negotiate with you. Instead of you paying $4,000 or $5,000, maybe they'll accept two and release you as one of, and just go after the other three. And then you can fork out a couple of thousand or nothing to get rid of it and not have a judgment against you would be worth it."
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure since he sent this. I got the letter that said that, you know, there's going to be a hearing for a default judgment. And I thought,
well, maybe it would be you still have time to not have the judgment against you if you're willing to pay something. But if you want to email me, I'll give you the gentleman's name and request that you talk to me on the radio and request that the gentleman that that I was going to refer give you a call and put your phone number in there, and I'll forward the email to him, and he'll call you, and we'll see where we wind up.
Okay, and I've seen your website and stuff before. I listen to you every Saturday. So I'll just go through the website and do the where I enter my name and the information.
Okay, very good.
Or do you want me to send it?
No, I'll probably send it directly. It's going to be better. Just Joe.
Oh, okay, then.
Just send it to joe at attypip.com.
Y-A-P-P.com.
ATTY, abbreviation for attorney. ATTYPIP.com.
PIP.com, PIP. I should know this, but I just, like I said, I just listen to you in the morning. I don't really pay attention to the websites because I've never needed to. So.
All right. Well, there you go.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let's go to, let's give out the numbers. We have about 8 minutes left in the show, and we have time for one or two more calls. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Let's go to Art in Tampa. Hey, Art.
Good morning, Joe. I relocated. I flew from San Leandro, California to Tampa, Florida. Now, they lost my luggage. I wanted to know statute of limitations. How long does a person have?
All right, now who lost your luggage? Airlines?
Yes.
Okay. And you put in a valid claim?
I didn't call them, you know, but they said I had to get an attorney or something.
Well, how long ago was this?
It's been a while, though. I've been out here 3 years, that's what I'm saying. How long do I have on statute limitations, lost luggage?
Well, so contractually, usually there's a whole thousands of statute limitations on different subjects. Usually the one on contracts is 5 years. Whether there might
five
be...
Years. I got time.
Well, no, hold on. Time. Whether there might be one of a lesser time on this particular case, I'm not sure. So, but the problem you have, I think, is that you've waited so long. Why would someone who lost their luggage wait, you know, 3 years to put a claim in?
But I called them, and then they was talking about that I had to go through all, you know, a lot of stuff, you know.
Well, you're going to have to go through a lot more stuff now with no good evidence because too much time has gone by.
No. Well, as far as flying, their system leaving San Leandro or Oakland, California, out here to Tampa, Florida.
Come, what's the luggage? What's the value of the contents of the luggage?
There was some great stuff in there. I think, you know, maybe I can get, you know, I'm not trying to be greedy, 5-10 G's.
And did you ever give them a list of the items in your luggage that were lost?
No, because I didn't remember at first, but they claimed that they didn't. It wasn't, they didn't lose it, but they did. And then they gave me a runaround because they was trying to get me to pay for the luggage to get back out here to me.
Yeah, I'm just guessing you're going to have a really hard time for something that happened 3 years ago, and you didn't remember at the time what was in the luggage, and now you come up with a list of things that are worth $5,000. I don't think you're going to have. My guess.
Southwest Airlines.
Yeah, my guess is you're not going to get very far in this, and you're going to have to go to maybe small. If you say $5,000, you're going to have to go to. You could go to small claims court without an attorney. But that's going to be a hard case to prove.
Southwest Airlines, they got the money. It ain't no problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, I wish you well with all that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
thank
a lot.
You, sir.
All right. Thank you.
You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Let's go to Margie in Sun City Center.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Yes.
Okay. I own my own home. And I will be selling it within the next 2 years. I will not be buying another. I will be going to a independent living senior facility. So will I be subject to capital gains because the home
Well, no, you have a one-time exemption on your home.
Oh, fantastic.
So it's up to, I think you'd be fine.
Okay, that's all I need to know then. I had other questions like could I deduct sales costs and moving expenses, but this is great. Thank you so much.
All right, Margie, thank you. If you ever need anything, I do have an office there in Sun City Center, so.
Oh, terrific.
All right, thank you.
Telephone number?
So I'll give you the toll-free number, 1-800 226-3529.
Okay, thank you. Right. I wrote that down.
All right, thank you.
Goodbye.
All right, let me talk to Michael in Bradenton real quick. Michael?
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, what can I do for you? So hello? I've got Howard of Howard and Angela in here on the real estate show here, so I've got to get him, take care of him too, but what can I do for you quickly?
Okay, I'm going to be inheriting a vacation home along with my sibling. And my sibling and I guess we'd be sharing half ownership each. And I wanted to know if there's a way for my parents to set up the home so that neither one of us can sell it. If let's say one of us hit dire straits and had to sell it for some reason.
Yeah, they can just give it to you jointly with right of survivorship instead of one half interest each. Then you both would have to agree.
Okay, so it's called right of survivorship?
Yeah, just joint between the two of you with right of survivorship. That way you both would have to agree.
Okay.
All right.
So that means if one of us wanted to sell it, and let's say the operating costs on one side became too great, how does that work if one of them just says, okay, I'm not contributing anymore?
One of you could force a sale through a partition sale. Howard, let me give you my cell number. You can call me on the way out of here. Wait till about till 9 o'clock and give me a call to my cell. 727-667-3967.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Howard, good morning to you.
Good morning. I heard the question on my way in this morning, and the question was, is there a requirement in the state of Florida to do a disclosure about defects in the property? And the
let's define the question as mold, though.
There is no requirement to disclose mold in the state of Florida. I can't talk about other states. However, if they are dealing with a realtor to sell the property, then just about every realtor will ask the homeowner to complete a disclosure. And on that disclosure,
questionnaire.
It is a five-page questionnaire. And in that, there are questions about mold. The purpose of that is actually to protect the seller so that the buyer won't come back later on and then attempt to sue the seller for an undisclosed defect. So it really is a protection for the seller as well as the buyer. Now, there's no such usage generally with respect to renters.
Yeah. Well, mold is so difficult because you could have a big mold problem right now, but you take care of it. Thank you for listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Listen to Howard and Angela coming up.